Welcome to the Limp Report Live. So we have some late breaking news that we're going to get to before I tell you what today's stories are. Number one, you might have heard this already. In fact, Frank DePasquale was nice enough to send this over to me just a few minutes ago, that there's going to be another supermarket strike here in Southern California. Negotiations have broken down between various unions and Ralph's and Vons Pavilion Albertsons. United Food and Commercial Workers says 60,000 grocery workers may actually go out on strike. UFCW, a comment from Ralph's: we have three very clear objectives. This is from Ralph's, not the union. Number one, to put more money in our associates' paychecks. Number two, keep groceries affordable for our customers. And three, to maintain a sustainable future for our business. By working together, we win together. But watch this space, because we might have another strike on our hands, supermarket strike, at a terrible time when people are very concerned about stocking shelves. Number one, they're very concerned about what's going to happen with wheat prices, oil prices, edible oil prices, as well as gasoline prices, because of what's going on in Russia and the Ukraine. So timing couldn't be worse for this to happen. And our other late breaking news, and Sally, you're going to appreciate this because you've got three dogs, and Tony, you're going to appreciate it because I think you have two dogs or three dogs. I'm not sure how many you have. But dog bites are costing California residents $135 million a year, more than any other state in the U.S. This is from the Insurance Information Institute. California, Florida, and Texas have the highest number of dog bite claims. Typically, homeowners insurance covers dog bite claims, but I'm shocked. And you guys, being dog owners, should know this. This is why I don't have a dog. The average cost of a dog bite claim is $64,622. So with that, let's get on to our news today. The USDA gives approval for gene-edited beef. Regenerative farming gets a boost. Kroger's private brand gets a lawsuit. Google figures out how to eliminate food waste. And Ford has some fun. In the metaverse, we explore how to eat. On the Lemper Report, we discuss the language of plant-based foods. Jason Green is next week's guest on Lost in the Supermarket, and we share just one intriguing thought of his. And in the Bullseye, a new virtual food hall that just might make you hungry. So, Sally, what do you think about USDA's decision to allow gene-edited CRISPR technologies on our cows?
Hi, Phil. I think this is really big news. You know, they're going to clear the marketing of food products from cattle that has been altered with CRISPR technology, which has been around for a while. And what's interesting about it is, you know, we're facing a lot of issues with climate change. And this trait that they are altering makes these cows have a slicker coat, a slicker hair, so that they can withstand high temperatures better. Now, according to scientists and the FDA, they are saying that this is already a naturally occurring mutation that happens in cows that are raised in tropical environments.
So just so everybody knows, we're not talking about GMOs. What we're talking about with CRISPR is they can go in, they can either turn off or on a particular gene. In this case, it's the hair of the cows that they're turning off so that the cows don't grow as much hair, so that they can be in these climates. The other thing that probably is the most important, I think, for consumers and for retailers to understand is they will not have to label this as being, you know, gene manipulated. And my issue and my question is going to be whether or not a lot of consumer groups jump on this and really make it an argument for people thinking that it's going to be GMO, because the difference between CRISPR and GMO is significant. But in, I think, the average consumer's mind, it gets lumped together. And as a result of that, a lot of confusion. So I think we're going to hear a lot more about this. Talking about what's going on at the farm, there's a new study that just came out that really looks at the link between regenerative agriculture and the impact on food nutrients. What's going on with that?
Again, really interesting research here, particularly when we're all trying to figure out ways that we can increase our sustainability efforts and deal with climate change and feed more people. But they're finding out that the study was published in the journal PeerJay, and they looked at 10 farms across the country. They asked them to grow 1 acre of peas, sorghum, corn, or soybeans. And then on a neighboring plot of land, they had the same crop using conventional farming methods. Now, the regenerative method meant that there was n it was an it was a there was no-till, cover cropping, and crop rotations for a minimum of 5 years. And what's so interesting is what they found was the regenerative methods made these crops more nutrient-rich.
And if we take a look, you know, for those of you that listen and watch our webcast, Farm Food Facts, we've been talking to farmers now for probably 2, 3, 4 years about the whole regenerative movement. And, you know, from a farmer standpoint, it's better, better yields. But this is the first time we're really seeing about nutrients. And just to give you some idea, the regenerative farms, on average, had 34% more vitamin K, 15% more vitamin E, 14% more vitamin B1, 17% more vitamin B2, 11% more calcium, 16% more phosphorus, and 27% more copper. In the case of phytochemicals, there was a range of between 15 and 22% more. Wow. I mean, when we talk about good health and good nutrition, this solves a lot of issues. And also, from a carbon standpoint, the regenerative farmers had twice as much carbon in their topsoil and three times as many in their soil health score based on USDA's Haney test for soil health. So, you know, this is great news for farmers. It's great news for us as consumers. And I think we're going to see a lot more attention on this as we should.
Yes, and it's an opportunity really to market these products that come out of this to consumers that are growing more and more interested in nutrient-dense foods, healthy foods that that help with these so many chronic diseases that people are dealing with.
And besides the potential strike here in Southern California, Ralph's, which is a Kroger has another problem on their hands. What's that about?
Yes, I'm really sorry to hear this because you know, Phil, that I am a Kroger shopper.
Yep.
A few times a week I'm at the Kroger or ordering from them. And I am a big purchaser of their private brand organic products, the Simple Truth brand. But apparently, the Ecological Alliance organization has now filed a lawsuit against Kroger because a number of their private label products are testing with very high lead levels. And when we say very high lead levels, the daily maximum exposure level is just 0.5 micrograms. Now, a spinach with bacon salad kit for one, they found, had 70.1 micrograms of lead.
150 times what the limit should be. And also, you know, when you take a look, not only in that salad kit, but their sweet peas and carrots contain 33.1 micrograms. Graham crackers contain 11.2 micrograms. Cinnamon raisin bagels, 6.82 micrograms. And I'll tell you something, I'm really surprised because so many of the retail environments that are out there, Aldi, ShopRite, I mean, they've got a lot of laboratory tests going on for their private labels. So how this could sneak through at Kroger, I think some heads are going to roll there. Talking about heads rolling, Google has decided that they're going to take a strong position on food waste. And what they did, now that more people are coming back, and just to give you some idea, Google has offices in 170 cities worldwide. So we're talking about a huge, huge amount of employees here. So what they decided to do, because they offer free food, is they're giving out bowls that were an inch less deep. So therefore, people can go back and get as much as they want, but they eliminated a substantial amount of waste, 30 to 70% less waste. And this goes back to some of the experiments that were being done up at Cornell by Brian Wozniak, who would, fool around with different size plates. I don't know if he ever did bowls, but just different things like that. And I think that if this is a success for Google, this is really something that every grocerant, every restaurant, everybody who's concerned about waste should be following.
Yes, I agree. I remember those studies from Cornell, and it does seem like a very effective way to sort of unconsciously change your perception of how much you eat. I also thought it was really interesting that, Google has a really big impact they can make here because they're making enough meals that they're larger than some fast food chains. So this is not just a small company taking a stand. This is a really, really big impact. In addition, they're taking a lot of other steps to work towards a zero waste plan.
Yeah, I give them a lot of credit for doing it. They've been involved in food for a long time, not only giving their employees food, but using Google to help from a technology standpoint. In the food world, they work with a lot of retailers, grocery retailers throughout the country. So, yeah, thumbs up, kudos to Google. What about Ford? Ford is doing something interesting.
Yes, and I absolutely love this story. Big kudos to the Ford company. They are testing self-driving electric vehicles, and what they're doing to test this is they're delivering food to challenged communities, senior communities in Detroit. But what they also did, which is such a wonderful part of it, is they commissioned a teenage art student, to create the design for this food truck. And it's beautiful. It's all about equality. It's all about community. And I just think it's a wonderful thing that they're doing.
Yeah, I agree. And certainly coming out of the pandemic, I think that everybody has a new appreciation for each other. And certainly now with what's going on with the Ukraine, where we're seeing a lot of people stepping up to see what they can do to help Ukraine, not only by giving them money, but just having the emotion for this, fabulous centuries-old, culture and so on. My hope is when we get past the pandemic, when we get past, Ukraine, and hopefully, they're successful in their effort to thwart Russia, that what we'll see is we'll see a new sense of community. And that's what we've been lacking, I think, for probably a good decade. I had a conversation with someone the end of last week, and not to get politics involved, but Dan Quayle, 20 years ago, more than 20 years ago, really cautioned us about losing that family unit. And hopefully, he had a warning sign for that, even though he couldn't spell potato. But a warning sign, and hopefully we're now going back to that. Let's talk about the metaverse, as we are doing now every single week. More and more is hitting about the metaverse. I was just talking to a retailer on Friday, who said, we're scared of it. We know everybody's doing it. We need to know more about this, and we need to figure out where our grocery store can play in the metaverse. So I guess the first question that we need to ask ourselves is, can we eat in the metaverse?
Well, we can't really eat yet, as far as I know. I don't know how we're going to do that. But the same question has occurred to me. What are the real world benefits of food in the metaverse? And it's really starting to occur to me that there are a lot of great benefits. You know, this weekend my son got on his Oculus and showed to and gave it to me to try out. And what he was doing was he was going into a virtual kitchen and he was finding ingredients and he was making something. And I thought, wow, this is a fantastic way to teach cooking. But there are some other great ways that that real world benefits are coming out of this. And so we're seeing this with like celebrity chefs are getting involved, where you can go in and you can shop at a digital farmer's market, buy your ingredients, then you can combine them and create an NFT, and you can use that NFT. In some cases, you're using it to like for coupons, or there are supper clubs that are being created where people get together in the metaverse and then put their money, pool their money to their NFTs together, and then go to a real restaurant. But there certainly are appearing to be some great benefits.
Yeah, and then there's this one company called OneRare, which is billed as the world's first food metaverse. And what they're doing is they're selling shares, if you would, or NFTs, to different chefs to be part of this. So on average, it costs about $300. What they want to do is they want to have 1,000 chefs, I think. I think they want to have 1,000 chefs to be part of this. My only concern about the metaverse, and we've seen it with Bitcoin, we've seen it with Second Life, everything, is that some of these startups that are going to be doing this, that are going to be selling these things, frankly, it's just so they can make money. The underlying idea about a metaverse, to your point, is to create a community. Where people can get together, they can talk, maybe they meet at a restaurant. I am very much in favor of the metaverse and everything that can be done. I think we are going to have certain things that are opportunistic for a lot of these companies. And as a result, I think there's going to be some people that get ripped off.
Yes, well, and we are seeing a lot of companies, startups that are financing their business before they even deliver a product to people. And one of the things we read about was a wine company, a winemaker that is selling vintage wines, but you're going to get it in 30 years, you know. The
If the
so
winery still exists in
yes,
30
and so
years,
there it is
if the guy
interesting.
doesn't take the money and run,
Exactly.
So yeah. Well, we will continue to be watching the metaverse, continuing to educate about the metaverse. And now it's time for the Lempert Report. Carolyn Fortuna wrote an important column on Cleantechnica about how the language of menus could inspire us to make better choices. She asks if the language used in a restaurant's menu could change the way you look at plant-based foods in particular. What do you think when you read a menu and see the words rich or crispy? The language of food can be blatant, like acidic, or nuanced, like honeyed, or it can be inviting, like citrusy, or inhibiting, like sour. The words on menus and sandwich boards suggest flavors that can inspire customers' eating decisions. So the language of food can help build anticipation and even convince a hesitant customer to try something new. Today's food entrepreneurs, she says, are leaning towards drawing upon an extraordinary melange of language, history, and food to appeal to flexitarians and others who have become intrigued by meatless meals. Compared to the original dish names that used language that highlighted the lack of meat in a dish, like meat-free or vegetarian, these new names that emphasize taste or origin, like Cumberland Spiced, or use more appealing words for plant-based options like field-grown or garden, significantly increase sales of the target vegetarian dishes, according to a field experiment that was conducted in a UK-based cafe chain and was reported in The Language of Sustainable Diets by the study authors Bacon, who's a behavioral science researcher, and Wise Atwood and Venard of the World Resource Institute. WRI finds that the two most effective descriptive message doubled the chance that a consumer would order a vegetarian menu item. These themes are small changes can make a big difference, and join a movement of people choosing foods with less impact on the climate. We've said for a long time that plant-based foods need to stand on their own merits and not try to emulate or mimic their animal counterparts. Taste is number one. Be sure to join us along with the Food Institute at the Protein and Plant Evolution Virtual Conference June 1st through 3rd, as for the first time ever, we will bring both sides of protein to the table to discuss the future. Is it flexitarian, carnivore, vegan? You're in for a riveting 3-day discussion. Join us at the URL hopin.com events protein plant evolution. Here's a preview of what Jason Green, a neuroscientist and the co-founder and CEO of Upward Farms, the breakthrough vertical farming company that grows fish and leafy greens in Brooklyn, told me about the future of farming. For the complete episode, which posts next week on supermarketguru.com, just click on the Lost in the Supermarket icon. You know, when I look at the future and I look at the supply chain problems that we've had, when I look at, you know, having 100,000 truck drivers out of the workforce, I look at, you know, having to get a bag of lettuce from California that grows, I guess, about 96% of all lettuces to Brooklyn, New York. This is not a very efficient system. So with your background, with everything that you're doing, you're looking to really upend this whole system and grow close to where people are. Tell me a little bit about that and why you're doing it.
Thanks, Bill. Yeah, I think you've already teed up a number of the issues that we're addressing. Over the last several years, we've seen that climate change is not just a future threat, but is affecting the food that's available every day. We've seen that yields across the globe are dropping. Yields in the U.S. actually fare worse than many cases global averages, and that's particularly concerning for us here at home in the U.S. What we're now seeing over the last 2 years through the COVID-19 pandemic is the emergence of new risks. That the consolidation of production, whether it's in geographic areas like California or Arizona for leafy greens, or just how globalized food has become, whether that's air freight of fish from all over the world. Fish is one of the most traded commodities across borders. Or if you're looking at the inputs to agriculture, and we're now seeing how the war in Ukraine is creating new food security risks. Countries are shutting their borders. They're saying they're not going to export food because the concern is that there isn't enough at home. And I think all of those are, they are increments that are adding to what we have known for a number of years now, and it emerged during the climate discussion that preceded the issues over the last 2 years and over the last 2 weeks, is that how and where food is grown is not serving consumers. And it's not serving retailers either. So the question is, you know, who is it serving? And that's probably a deeper discussion. But what we know is that it's not serving consumers and it's not serving retailers. And that's really where we come in. What we're trying to do is really rationalize the supply chain, grow food that people want to eat where they're eating it.
On today's Bullseye, we explore the evolution, or should I say the revolution, of the food hall in the metaverse. The Cordia Corporation just announced a crypto food hall in the metaverse that will host 1,000 chefs. Peter Klimaka, CEO and the former owner of the Blind Pig restaurant in Las Vegas, said in a statement that the restaurant environment is as challenging today as it has ever been. Most independent restaurants are barely hanging on. A few new customers can literally make the difference between closing for good and surviving. Our Chef Collection is a fantastic and inexpensive first step for restaurants to get exposure to NFTs and the growing cryptocurrency community. He told that to Nation's Restaurant News, and that Cordy is selling 1,000 Chef NFTs as entrants to the food hall. These NFTs are digital representations of chefs. There are 500 men and 500 women tokens that are available, each with a unique name, like Chef Tasty, Chef Yummy, Chef Nasty, and Chef Delivered. The cost per chef will be 0.08 ETH or Ethereum, which translates to roughly $200. Verified shareholders of Cordia Corp will be able to purchase up to 5 chef NFTs in a pre-sale at half price. The NFT chef holders will then be invited to cooking events virtually and in person and receive airdrops of the next series of crypto food hall NFTs and discount codes for virtual restaurants. Menu item NFTs are now on sale, and in April there will be a public sale of food hall locations. The food hall community connects on Discord and Telegram, as well as Instagram and, of course, on Facebook. So don't forget, go to supermarketguru.com, sign up for our newsletters, listen to our archives of this program, as well as Farm Food Facts, as well as Lost in the Supermarket. And we will see you same time, same place next week, right here.